Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to this one, mostly because it's seems gameplay wise seems very similar to
What's that game?
Dust Divers. It's that kind of brawling game, so for me it seems like it's going to be that, so it does look very interesting to me. I'm not a fan of gacha games. That is something that's going to irritate me, especially when you're like, oh, I want to unlock this character, and it's like, nope, you just gotta buy loot box after loot box to see if you get it. But yeah, because then my problem with that is I don't mind shelling out $70 for a game. I know a lot of people don't like that, and a lot of people think it's too expensive, and they're like, I don't want to shell out $70 for a game. But then you get into these gacha games, and let me tell you're probably, if you added it up, I would say most people that are playing in the gacha games and actually getting into it in the long run probably do end up spending more than $70 on these games, and then justify it with like, I'm having fun, so it's okay. And I'm like, then why wasn't $70? Just my old man ranting. But I am very looking forward to this game finally coming out. Although I will say that I was super hyped for it when I talked about it earlier, and it's just been so long. It's one of these games that they talk about it years in advance, and then years trickle of information that I would say my hype has died down. And not because I'm just kind of less excited about it, but more of the stages of grief kind of thing where acceptance. And it really is. I feel like one of the problems is that we've been talking about games way too early. And I think this is a big was it Starfield has actually avoided this. They're building up the hype again, which I think is really great. But I do think that a lot of games get announced way too early because you get really excited for these games and then they don't release for a year and they don't release for another 2 years. And I do feel that in a way you go through those stages of grief where you're like, I really want to play it. I really want to play it. That's not out yet. And then eventually you're just kind of, it's not out. Okay, whatever. I've just come to terms with it. You've mellowed yourself out on it. And then when it does come out, you're not as excited as you would have been if it had come out earlier because you've mellowed on it, just because you've processed all those emotions. So I do feel that this one was announced way too early. But back to your question about you wondered how many people they have. I looked it up. So apparently when they created the original start, was it Honkai Impact the Third, when they created it was a team of seven people. So it was a seven
Wow.
person company when they created the Honkai Impact the Third. And then within 2 years of that, they went from seven to 200 people. But then when they did Genshin Impact, they had 150 people on the team for Genshin Impact. They underestimated the difficulty of creating the open world, so they started in 2017. By mid 2019, so within 2 years, they doubled. They went from 150 to 300 people, and then within the next year, they went up to 500. And then the year after that, by February 2021, they were up to 700 people. So this company has just been growing and growing, and it's pretty big now.
That's impressive. Going back to what you said, though, like you said something really interesting, which was like, I would go with the opposite, right? Is I think for maybe I was going to say a certain age, but I think maybe it's not an age. Maybe a certain type of gamer or somebody who, because like for me, right? I've gotten started getting into Kickstarter in a big way, and most Kickstarter games you Kickstarter it and get an email a year later. Oh, by the way, we're out. I'm like, okay, cool, but I don't have time to play you, so I have a Nintendo Kickstarter game that was like I'm super excited about, and it came out, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not playing my Switch now. I won't be playing it until I get into a Switch mode. So I think if you're like, I wouldn't say busy, but just you've got stuff to do, it doesn't matter how early a game is announced. Like, okay, cool, it's coming out. Or if you're in that sort of like Antoine thought process, okay, I'm not buying this game when it comes out on release, or I'm buying very few games when they come out on release. I'm just getting it on sale. Like Space Marine 2 is coming up in 2 months, and I will probably not play that because I'm probably might be playing something else. Multiplayer, and then this little Palia, and then this little V Rising that I'm playing, and that's it. That's the sort of the downfall of having multiplayer cooperative games, is that I don't have time to play single player. So I think there are people who are like, okay, this game is coming out, it's exciting, to summarize basically, but at the end of the day, they've gotten to a point like me where I'm like, okay, it's exciting, great, but I'm not, if it comes out or it's delayed 2 years, it's not going to make or break me anymore. Okay, cool.
I've just noticed. I don't know. Maybe that's my ADD or whatever talking. But yeah, I've just noticed that for me, I'm kind of like, yay! And then later on, if it takes 2 years, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that game.
And then that is definitely like realistic, is that people will forget, and I can imagine myself in when I'm 43, you're saying, oh my God, I forgot to buy Starfield or something like that, unless something like, and I think it's just not even about gaming and like lots of businesses. Like I have a really favorite restaurant that's down by right, the FE21, right, around that side in Kaohsiung where Adam and I live. And I always tell people, and I tell like restaurateurs and friends who run restaurants, I'm like, yeah, if you're not on Facebook reminding me, I'm not going to remember to order your food by Uber Eats or something because it's not on my feed, it's not on my Twitter, it's not on my Instagram. You're out of my brain and I've forgotten about you. And then I think lots of games and businesses are like that, where if you're not constantly pushing out something to remind people, yes, I exist in this realm of Kickstarter games and of Switch games, of PlayStation games, of people having 2, 3, 4 devices in their house, you're buried on the bottom of the pile under someone's dead dog memory. That's it. But yeah, with that happy thought, Adam, your third story.
So my third story is going to be Front Mission 2 Remake, which unfortunately is only available for the Switch, which does disappoint me because I'm a Front Mission fan. And
tell us what Front Mission is.
I don't think I ever played. Oh, okay. Front Mission is a tactical RPG or TRPG or strategy RPG, SRPG. They're basically used interchangeably. But it is one of those, basically you get a grid and you have your characters and you move around and you use their abilities. It's very similar to Final Fantasy Tactics or Disgaea or the upcoming Persona 5 Tactica. But the difference is that Front Mission is a mech game. So if you're a fan of Armored Core, you probably should check out Front Mission if you haven't heard about it. You might not enjoy it because the gameplay is very different, but the genre is very similar. Basically, you control something called a Vanzer. And I'm always mixing up the word Vanzer and Shrike depending on different situations. Because in the original game, your main character, Lloyd's Vanzer was named Shrike, and then later on they had the anime Blue Gender, and in the anime Blue Gender they have these mechs that look exactly like Vanzers, but they're called Shrikes. So I always mix up those two words and use them interchangeably. But yeah, you get these mechs and you can customize them. You can switch out some of the parts. You can switch the arms if you want. You can switch the weapons if you want. And then you can, you take them out and it's a tactical game like XCOM basically with mechs. So that's the genre. It originally came out on the Super Nintendo. I believe the first game was on the Super Nintendo. Loved the first game. I don't think I ever played the second game. The third one, Front Mission 3 was on the PlayStation. Oh no, Front Mission 2 was on PlayStation as well. Front Mission 3 was on PlayStation. That was when they went 3D. Played Front Mission 3. Loved it. I did not play some of the later ones. I do have Left Alive, which is in the Front Mission universe, but haven't gotten around to it due to the backlog. Also, I've heard it's pretty bad, but I don't care. I want to play it anyway. But this is a remake of Front Mission 2. It is now brought into the 3D era. So if you have not had the opportunity to play this game, or you haven't played it in years, because this game is probably more than 20 years old at this point, now is a great time to hop in and get your mech fix if Armored Core is too difficult for you, or you don't feel that it's a good investment in time to get through these bosses. So yeah, I saw it and I was like, oh, perfect. This is great. And I want to play it, but it's only on Switch. It's not on PlayStation or Xbox or even PC. Yeah, unfortunately, I might have to pick up a Switch someday. Or if they come out with a Switch 2 and it's backwards compatible, that's going to solve a lot of problems for me.
Me too. This looks exciting. As you're talking, I usually don't watch the videos anymore. But now I just like, I'm like, I want to see what this game's about. So I opened up this stream on my phone and it looks pretty cool. And in the trailer, is that robot actually holding a giant white baseball bat?
Yes, it is.
Oh, cool.
It is holding a giant, it's a club basically. But yeah, it's basically a giant baseball bat.
Okay.
So
nice.
I'm not sure which mechanics they have. I know which mechanics they had in, say, the third game. You could actually get your little dude to get out of the mech and run around on the field. And sometimes you could even climb into other mechs. I think one of the things you could do is you could aim to damage the mech, or you could actually do pilot damage. And if you did pilot damage and took out the pilot, but the mech was still viable, you could actually get out of your mech and climb into the other one and then start using their mech, although it would still have damage on its own as well. But yeah, the way it works is you have, I think, typically arm weapons. I don't remember if they have shoulder weapons or not. But yeah, you have weapons built for different distances. So you have melee weapons that, you know, and melee weapons could be a physical melee weapon like a sword or a baseball bat. or it could be just a really short range gun, like say a shotgun or something like that. And then you get your really long range, usually missiles that'll fire from really long range, or sniper rifles or that sort of thing. But it's very much, if you're the kind of person who enjoys games like XCOM, you'll probably enjoy Front Mission.
A side question, right? An expansive question. It just occurred to me, do you think, given the console power that the Switch has at the moment, that they're purchasing or these like exclusive Nintendo Japanese anime properties and pulling them away from Sony because they are, the Switch is, has done as well as it has?
It's a possibility that they're doing that. I will say that I know a lot of times when a game is released for one console and not another, people automatically jump to the money hatting. I won't say excuse, but the money hatting, that, that they just assume that must be the case. I don't think it's as common as people say it is. If a game comes out and it's always exclusive and it's marketed as exclusive, and I think it's usually pretty obvious when people have paid for exclusivity. But I think a lot of the times it's the developer's choice. And I think in this case, because this, for example, Front Mission, is the IP is owned by Square Enix. This is obviously, people are associating them with Final Fantasy and that sort of thing. And when Final Fantasy 16 came exclusive to PlayStation, a lot of people claimed, oh, PlayStation paid for exclusivity. This is money hatting. PlayStation never came out and said, this is a PlayStation exclusive because of this, or I don't think it was ever marketed as PlayStation exclusive either. I don't know, maybe it was, but I mean, it was well known to be PlayStation exclusive. But yeah, I think in that case, when Square came out and they said, oh, we're doing this, they specifically said we wanted to work with PlayStation on this because we wanted to use that PlayStation SSD. So it was built with that in mind. And that was part of the reason why they did it. I think in this case with Front Mission, again, I don't think Nintendo's paying for exclusivity. I think it's probably Square Enix making a decision saying, hey, this is a more niche title. It's a remake of a niche title. That's kind of this old school kind of game. And I think they probably think that most of these kind of retro games probably sell better on Switch, which is why Octopath Traveler 1 and 2 came out on Switch. 1 only came out on Xbox, not PlayStation. 2 came out on PlayStation, not Xbox, but 1 and 2 both came out on Switch. Was it Harvestella, a Switch exclusive? Triangle Strategy, which I really wanted to play, which is very much like Final Fantasy Tactics, is a Switch exclusive. So I think I think it's more of probably them figuring Square. I think in this case, it's probably more Square Enix figuring, doing a cost analysis and saying, if we make this game, where is it going to sell the best? And they determine that these kind of more retro style games are going to sell better on Switch than they will anywhere else. And so they figure, between development costs and sales, this is the sweet spot, in our opinion.
Thank you for that very logical argument. All right, and that was your third story, so it's my third story. And yes, as we were just talking about, it is Warhammer Space Marine 2. And this is a game I played Space Marine 1, and it has one of the fondest memories I've ever had of an action game. Where I'm not super into Warhammer, like Antoine is super into Warhammer. I've read a few of the books, I've listened to some audiobooks. I've actually never played the tabletop stuff, but in Space Marine, right, you're a captain and you're running around killing orcs and stuff. In number two, of course, you're killing the Tyranids. But in the first one, the greatest memory I had was you had the jetpack, you had the Thunderhammer, you'd fly down from high, you'd hit the ground, and it'd just be like that sort of like anime thing of orcs just flying everywhere and damage and blood and guts and stuff. And it was just that the feeling of power and destruction was just unmatched in any game I've ever played since. But no, Space Marine 2, there was some gameplay at Gamescom, and the gameplay was mixed. People, again, depends who you looked at. Some people look at this through a very critical eye. Okay, this doesn't work. Like, this doesn't work. There are some YouTubers, and especially older YouTubers, like our age and middle-aged gamers, they're like, actually, for the audience, this game actually works. So the criticisms that some people have mentioned, right? And if you're watching the video, and thanks to Adam, as always, for queuing all of this stuff up, is that the weapons themselves feel papery or don't really have any weight or heft to them. They feel like, yeah, you're this genetically modified super soldier with two hearts and multiple redundant organs. You're like 4, 5, 6, no, Captain Titus is like 1,000 years old, right? So you don't fight like it, right? It just doesn't feel like matching the material in a sense. But this is from the PC Gamer article. And to me, that doesn't really matter. Like, you're like, okay, you're expecting this guy to swing this sword fast, but he's big. Like, a typical space marine is like 8 and 9 feet tall. So he's like a big person, right? How do you expect a big person like that to move like Ninja Gaiden for those people who know that game, right? So it's just impossible. But no, forgetting all that stuff, the gameplay looks really good. And we saw the trailer, and the trailer had some gameplay in it as well. It looks like it's going to be fun, right? The only thing I'm really worried about is just replayability. The first game, once you finish it, right, there was nothing really to say, hey, I should do this again. Or some. I'm hoping for skill trees. I'm hoping for things, not just like high score attacks. Again, I think for most middle-aged gamers, the exception of Adam will play games multiple times, I think you need a really big motivator to play a game again, especially with a huge backlog. But even Adam's, since we started this podcast, Adam has really dropped down the playing games again shtick. So yeah, exactly. Cause it's becoming ridiculous. And I talked about this on the stream at one point. It's like, seeing new games comes out actually depresses me. Cause I feel sad. Like I'm not going to be able to play this. And I really want to play this. I was speaking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he has 3,300 hours in PUBG. I'm like, oh God, that's the benefits of working a lot less when you're 40. So anyway, Space Marine 2 coming out in October. There still might be a delay, I imagine, because of all the stuff coming out. Like I saw another game that I was excited about, and they like delay things. And I think it's just because, like we talked about this on the podcast before, not wanting to be in that hot 4 or 5 week period off a game coming out. Like I looked at Baldur's Gate 3 when we did the podcast last week. Baldur's Gate was 900,000 players. It's dropped down dramatically. It was 350,000 active players on Steam as of yesterday when I checked. So it's still, but looking at Google News and stuff, Baldur's Gate is still all there in stories of different things. So it makes sense. This is still something that most people are going to be able to play at least before the end of the year. And I said way back last year, I think we're talking about what game are you going to actually buy on release, buying this on release for sure. Yep. And that's it.
Played the demo for the original Space Marine. That came out a long time ago, right?
Yeah, it took 8 years for this to come out.
Okay, because I was like, I feel like I played the original demo on PlayStation 3.
Yep.
And again, it was one of those things where I have friends that are super into Warhammer. So I'll often say I'm Warhammer adjacent. I know what the factions are. I know their philosophies. I have recently been listening to a lot of Warhammer short stories on YouTube. I have watched a few vids. I have never played the tabletop game. They always really wanted to get me into it, but me living in Taiwan and them living in the States, that's not a viable thing to do. Also, I don't think it's as big here in Taiwan, so it's not as easy to get some of the play kits. You can get them, but they're harder to find.
Right.
But you're not going to find as many shops dedicated to that sort of thing. But it was very much like what you said, where for them, they played the demo, and I think one of them even played the game, and they absolutely loved it. And they were like, oh my God, this is so good. Whereas for me, who is not as invested in Warhammer, I played it and I was like, yeah, okay, it's all right. So I think it is one of those things where if you're a fan of the franchise, you're probably really going to enjoy it because you're going to see a lot of things that are familiar and you're going to be like, oh, I can finally play as a space marine and I can do this and that and that sort of thing. But if you're not somebody who's already invested in it, I think it's one of those things where you're like, okay, I'm a big guy who can rip arms off of a monster. All right, it's Gears of War. Yeah, so I think for people that are fans of Warhammer, it's going to be really popular. But yeah.
No, and I totally agree. And you bring up a really good point, Adam. And I think this applies to, again, one of those themes that we've talked about this year is that a lot of games suffer from this, that as your developer of Warhammer Space Marine 2, you're like, okay, how do I bring new people into this franchise? How do I expand my sales and make the shareholders happy, but at the same time, keep the gameplay somewhat true for the hardcore players? You've talked about this as well. And I guess this also applies to Armored Core as well, right? Is that you need to say, oh my God, there's this huge love for stagger mechanics in Dark Souls and Sekiro and games like that. But at the same time, like this is not what Armored Core used to be. So how do we blend the two? And Space Marine 2 definitely has that same issue. There's another Kickstarter game on that's doing like the RTS StarCraft 2 sort of vibe. And I'm like, they've done it, but okay, we need to elevate this, but at the same time, make this accessible to people. So it's really interesting and it's a fine line to walk. I think Space Marine 2, looking from the footage, has not done this. So I think it will be a game where you definitely won't enjoy it if you've never played a Warhammer game before.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. And with the last few minutes of today's show, Adam, is there any stories you want to talk about or you want to highlight?
Nah, I only had the three, yeah.
Okay, I'll bring this up because I just checked out because Adam, I don't know if Adam's backed it, but I backed the game that I talked about last week, Ratatan, and they've passed $1.1 million on Kickstarter. So they're bringing back one of the old Japanese composers for Patapon. There's a bunch of stuff. I'm sure Adam would know more about this because he has all this like lore stuff and history stuff all memorized in that gigantic brain. But now they announced like with this $1.1 million, they're bringing this guy in and he's going to be composing stuff for music and things because it's really interesting. But I'm excited for them. $1.1 million for a rhythm game that... And when was the last Patapon game, if you can remember?
It was on the PlayStation Vita. It had been a while ago.
Okay, so a while ago. So like a game...
I think it was actually technically a PSP game.
Okay.
Yeah. So I played it on the Vita, but I think it was actually a PSP game.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, probably something like that.
There you go. So $1.1 million for a 15-year-old franchise. That is impressive. And can you think of any other like hot rhythm games recently? I know we've seen students play them before over the last few years, but like in the Western Hemisphere, Guitar Heroes become very niche. Rock Bands become very niche. So it's to me, $1.1 million for this is impressive.
Yeah, no, it is very impressive. So I looked it up. Patapon 3's release date was April 12th, 2011.
Oh, so not that long ago. So that was like 12 years ago.
Not that long ago, just 12 years.
I was thinking
two
longer.
Console generation.
Because I was imagining, because I played my first Patapon in 2004 or 2003.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I think it is impressive. I got that same email. I did finally back them. I didn't read the whole email because it seemed like a lot of the things that they were talking about were for people who had gotten the premium edition or something like that, whereas I was just the basic digital version. So it didn't really apply to me. But yeah, it is impressive that they got that much funding. And I'm wondering, too, how many of those people are old school Patapon fans who were like, yay, or how many of them are people that were like, oh, this is cool. I never heard about this before, but I like the idea. So I'd be curious to see what the distribution is.
Yes, that will be interesting. And I think since we both backed it, we'll be able to follow the story and be in the Discord and check it out. And hopefully, perhaps even get early access and without too much of a serious NDA and talk about it at some point in future middle-aged gaming episodes, which would be awesome and fun. Cool. And yeah, I think that's about wraps it up. So Adam, you just mentioned before the show that your schedule has somewhat recovered, but I think not recovered back to April 2023 levels.
Yeah, in the sense that my mornings are basically the same as what they've always been. But some days I start work a little bit earlier, but it's not start in the morning, come home, go to one school, have an hour break, go to the other school. It's not that anymore. Instead, it'll be like start at this time, teach a class, and then you have 10 minutes to go to the other school. But it's back-to-back stuff. It's not like these. Before, it would be like you teach a class, you have an hour break, you go to another school, you teach a class, you have an hour break. So it's maybe you're teaching 6 hours, but it's taking 8 hours to get through the day because you have these 2-hour-long breaks and you're supposed to transition between locations. It's not that anymore. Yeah,
got it. So we should start to expect to see you streaming perhaps next week?
This week. I would have streamed yesterday, but yesterday was the last day of summer classes, so I wasn't able to. But I should start streaming on Friday.
Yes. And yeah, and that should mean like a little bit less crazy because for those of you who don't know, school in Taiwan starts today. So the first day back of school. So that means a lot less craziness over here. And hopefully you guys will get to see Adam at least when he's streaming and I'll be streaming Thursday or Friday. So I'll apologize. I didn't stream last week Thursday because I was in Taipei, but I did stream on the Friday. So I will say going forward, you can expect me to stream Pelia for an hour, either Thursday or Friday during the week. I'm going to be aiming for Thursdays just to keep the consistency going so you guys know can watch the video later because I do stream at an odd time in the afternoon where if you're not living in Taiwan or you're not living in Europe, it's hard to watch. And I know most of you guys do live in America. So yeah, please keep that in mind. And I think next week, we're probably not going to get Antoine on, so expect Adam and myself again, but we should see Antoine back in 2 weeks or so. Just hopefully at that point, highlight his experiences with Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield as well. I don't know anyone who will be playing Starfield. My younger brother was going to do the Game Pass thing, but he decided against it. And for sure, I mean, not unfortunately, I don't have any room in my schedule. So if you are playing Starfield and you would like to come on and tell us about it, please send us a Twitter message I know, send us a DM on Facebook and we'd love to hear from you.
Why did you decide to go against the Game Pass thing?
I'm not exactly sure. I think because I don't know, because he gets into a mood, right? Like, where it's not like me, both my younger brother and older brother, they can go into like days where they're like, just play mobile gaming only, like casual game, or they just won't play a game and just watch TV. Like, that is the thing they do, right? And it's not like I've shifted into the Adam phase where I don't watch, like last week, I did not watch any TV at all. And I just used the little time that I had to play my 1 hour of gaming a day. And I think that's just what's going to happen. So I've given up on TV, 1 hour of TV a week. That's the much, as much as I could do. The rest of that time is for gaming, unfortunately. Well, fortunately for gaming. Yeah, I think my brother is just in that mood where he doesn't want to like dedicate time to stuff. So I think that's why he decided against going through Game Pass to play Starfield. Yeah. And with that, thank you very much for joining and watching. And thank you as always for Adam for producing this show. If you are looking for a game producer full-time, Adam is always available. He'll need to give like a month's notice, right? Always. A month's notice, and then he'll be yours full-time remote work here in Taiwan, and he does amazing work. You go back and look through our episodes. If you know anybody who's looking for a video producer, someone who's experienced at editing, hosting podcasts on Riverside and OBS and other stuff, let us know. Again, send us an email, middleagegaming2020@gmail.com. Otherwise, we'll see you guys next week for more stories, more news, more games, and more middle-aged gaming crazies.
Catch you guys later.